All right, welcome back. Who's talking? Second half hour tonight. We're going to transition, good basketball term there, or pivot, whatever, over to basketball here momentarily. We'll be joined with by Corey Alexander momentarily. But speaking of basketball guests, next week, another show at 6 o'clock. We will have Terry Gates, longtime Virginia radio analyst, as well as a player on some of the best teams ever at Virginia. And then the week after that, December the 10th, we'll have Ted Jeffries.
And by the way, I think we have a caller on line one, Dave in Chesterfield. Dave, if you're there, do you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I have a couple comments, Frank and Javo. Hey, look, there's a couple things about the timeout on the last of the game. It seemed like to me somebody should take responsibility of going to sleep at the switch.
Yeah.
I tell you, when you do things like that, you're going to lose games. I'm going to tell you that. But they might have lost it anyway. Now, something else. This two-quarterback system. It didn't work last year, and we should have learned our lesson. We turn around and do the same thing this year, and it hasn't worked. How can a quarterback get in a groove when he plays a few plays and he go back to the bench and wait again? You cannot do it.
All right, Dave, I'm going to let Frank answer those. Go ahead, Frank.
All right, I'm going to keep this, Dave, I'm going to keep this quick. First off, thank you for calling tonight. Quickly, because I know we've got Corey on the line. First off, I couldn't agree more about the coaching. I mean, the quarterback carousel, I think it's a bad idea. I believe in rotating a quarterback into the game if you're trying to get some experience late in the game once the outcome is pretty much decided, or if things are going so horrendously wrong in the first half that you need to change the tempo of the game and you need and the team needs a pick-me-up. This stuff of having co-starters at QB is nonsense. The other question was about the timeouts. I'm not sure with 50 seconds left in the game if it would have made any difference on Saturday. I do think that his explanation, meaning Coach London, was a little fuzzy, and I think his final tweet or text that he sent Dave Teal was excellent, and unfortunately that didn't get in the news until a little bit later. But at the same time, you know, if Virginia had gotten the ball with 40 seconds or 35 seconds deep at that end of the field following a kickoff, I'm not sure that they'd shown anything to that point in the second half that a drive was even possible.
Yeah, you're right.
So freezing the kicker might have been his only play, but we'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, just some interesting decisions during the course of the game. But at any rate, I think we do have Corey Alexander waiting on the phone. Corey's a man almost needs no introduction. Was on the Grade 8 team in 1995. One of the, as Frank said, one of the best guards in Virginia history. Was the radio analyst, Corey, I think for 3 years. Succeeded a legend. succeeded Hobbo.
Certainly in his own mind.
You know, certainly big shoes to fill there. But you did very well, by the way. But
hey, Hobbo does have big shoes. I can vouch for that.
But at any rate, Corey Alexander joining us tonight. I tell you, you're a point guard. Let's start with Tevin Jones. He's seemingly made a real difference. Why is that the case?
Well, I believe he's made the biggest case because he is a guy that they can play traditionally with Tevin Jones at the point guard position. You know, they were having to play early in the season with Justin Anderson at the point guard position, who has never played point guard in his career. And he's, although he's a very good on the ball defender, et cetera, he's still 6'5", 6'6", trying to stay in front of much smaller guards. And, you know, the experiment once Jontel Evans got hurt early in the preseason was to play Joe Harris at the point guard. However, if you're playing Joe Harris at the point guard, it's hard for Joe Harris to score.
Yes.
And so from that standpoint, they made the change, and Justin Anderson became the guy, and he's never played that position. So, you know, it was asking a lot of him to be able to do it. And then, you know, Tevin was suspended for the first few games. So when you look at all those things together, they you know, experimented with Taylor Barnett, who's not a point guard. And honestly, Tevin Jones has never been a point guard. He's a scoring guard more than he is a point guard. But from the standpoint of them just being able to play traditionally with a small guard and not having to put a wing or a forward at the point has really helped them out. But let's not be too high on it because they haven't necessarily played against the greatest competition either, with Tevin Jones playing at the point guard. So the jury's still out as to see if he can do that against, you know, better competition.
What would you say is the difference between Tevin and Jontel Evans? Or is there much difference?
There's a tremendous difference. Jontel Evans is one of the best defensive players in the country, let alone the ACC at the point guard position. Jontel's experience. He's been through the fire. He's played for Coach Bennett for 3 years, and he understands what exactly it is that Tony Bennett wants from him. Tevin Jones is a freshman, the first-year player, and he doesn't have the experience, nor does he have the pedigree of being a point guard all of his life. Jontel Evans has always been a point guard. He's never been much of a scorer, so therefore, you know, process of elimination, he's a point guard. And so from that standpoint, it makes a huge difference just based upon what you've done for, you know, 10, 12 years of your life. And understanding for Jontel, it's getting everyone else involved, getting guys in spots, being a leader, where Tevin doesn't have that experience. He's kind of learning on the fly right now.
One more question, and I'll let Frank jump in here. Akil Mitchell, last year I would almost call him a role player. It seems like he's developing, or at least has the potential to develop beyond that this year.
Well, Akil does have the potential to develop beyond that, but it has to be within that role. See, where Akil often gets in trouble is when he goes out and tries to be Mike Scott. He's not that type of player. Akil Mitchell is a very good offensive rebounder, a better athlete than Mike Scott. And when he does that and attacks the offensive glass and plays within the scheme as to which Coach Ben is asking him to play, he's very good. It's when he gets out of his role and starts to try to be someone he's not is when Akil gets himself into trouble. So what I think he's done very well early in this season is he's done those things. When he's got his opportunities to try to score on the block, at times he's done well, at times he hasn't done as well, but he's always been very good attacking the offensive glass, putbacks, and, you know, and basically getting points off of everyone else. You know, Joe has found him on a number of nice passes and et cetera. So Akil has to just continue to be content with what his role is, and he can be successful and he can have good numbers doing so as long as he accepts that. It's when he steps outside and, you know, there's no Mike Scott. The closest thing to Mike Scott is, you know, is Gil, and he won't play this year. And so from that standpoint, Akil just has to be Akil and not try to be anyone else.
Corey, Virginia's got a huge game coming up Wednesday night, 7 o'clock against Wisconsin in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. How would you handicap Virginia going into this game, knowing that they've found a little bit of success lately and that the coaches are getting more comfortable and maybe Jontel can play, 10, 15 minutes in this game?
Well, I'm not sure what Jontel's status will be. I know he's trying to get ready to, you know, be available for the game. I think it's going to be a tough game for Virginia for a number of reasons. One, they're on the road in Wisconsin, a very stingy defense, and, you know, a team that has some veteran players back. And, of course, you know, Bo Ryan, you know, one of the best as far as defensive coaches. I mean, he and Tony Bennett, very similar in their defensive style of play. And so Virginia's struggle is scoring the basketball, as we so noticed against, I believe it was it Delaware with the 15 points in the first half?
Yes. Yeah. I that's the only game I saw in person, and that may have been the most brutal thing I've ever seen.
Ancient history.
Well, when you look at it, I mean, and like I said, Delaware is the best team Virginia's played this year. And so the thing, I mean, again, you know, one of the things, and Habo, you know this very well, when you play North Texas and you play Seattle, and Seattle, you know, has been good over the past couple of years, but they're down this year. But when you play against the level of competition that they've played really over the last three games, it can give you a, you know, false sense of security. It's almost fool's gold.
Yeah.
These teams they're playing not good. So when you have to go on the road and play against a very good, you know, a very good Big Ten team on their home court, who knows their defensive style, they know a lot, it makes it a tough stretch. It's a game where you need a guy like Jontel Evans, you know, to be able to contribute and be healthy, because he makes Virginia go. And not that Tevin Jones hasn't done well, but Tevin Jones has not done it against good competition. And that makes a big difference. And like I say, it's going to be interesting to see how these guys grow up, because you're really playing four to five first-year players. And going on the road in this type of atmosphere and that type of contest, and now, you know, for the first time, you're on the major networks, you're on ESPN, and the whole country's watching. Those things play a huge factor, especially for first-year players. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to that.
Yeah, speaking of first-year players, how would you assess, you know, Anderson, Toby, and Nolte thus far?
I believe they've been first-year players. That's the best way to put it. They've been very inconsistent or consistently inconsistent. But all are talented players, you know, guys who are ACC players. And, of course, you know, and I have a great respect for Tony Bennett, and I have a great respect for his coaching staff, and I have a good relationship with them. And what I have recommended to them is throughout this entire year, the focus is, and of course, every time you go out, you want to win the game. But in my opinion, their focus needs to be on developing these young guys, and especially those three, because when you take those three guys and you put them in the mix next year with Anthony Gill and, you know, Joe Harris is a senior and Malcolm Brogdon back in the mix and the first-year players you have coming in, you have an opportunity to have a really good team, but a lot of that has to do with the development of Justin Anderson, Mike Toby, and Evan Nolte. And that in itself is my reason for saying you have to develop, because I don't think this is going to be a great year for Virginia anyway. Whether Jontel's healthy, even if Malcolm would have been healthy, this is not a great team.
No, I think they're clearly pointing to next year, but you want to make the most out of this you can. It's funny you talk about coaches like that because, you know, I've talked to Jason Williford, and he has nothing good to say about you. He says you never passed him the ball.
Well, I mean, I was the first option. And then, you know, so that's one of the things. Now, Junior Burrow might disagree, but, like, that's one thing. And I'm sure, and you know, Barry Parkhill would say the same.
Yeah, the only way I could get it is go get a rebound.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
And we know Hubba wouldn't hustle for that rebound.
It's a rebound if I miss.
Let me, interesting. A lot of things going on from a conference perspective right now. How do you assess what you know, maybe they're trying to sell programs to figure out who's in what league?
It's crazy. I was doing a game. I did a game on Saturday at Georgetown. And so, of course, when you look at the Big East, it's okay. Well, who's here still? Who's leaving? I mean, and when we have these graphics that come on TV and it shows who's going where, it's so confusing. But, I mean, Maryland, I was shocked. I think the whole ACC was caught off guard with that one. And I understand conference realignment. I understand it's about money. But I just can't imagine how paying a $50 million exit fee, and of course, if I'm the great commissioner of the ACC, which I think Commissioner Swofford is one of the best in the country, they would pay every dime of that $50 million. For the standpoint of if you don't make them pay the entire $50 million, now Florida State comes up and says, okay, we're going to the Big 12. And you set a precedence by letting Maryland off the hook with some of that money, so now we want to get off the hook with some of that money. And so from the standpoint of Maryland, who, I mean, has been a doormat in the ACC football-wise, how are you going to compete in the Big Ten? I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me. And you've cut seven programs because you don't have the finances to support them, and yet you're going to pay a $50 million exit fee for the ACC, as well as increase your travel and your expense budget, because now you're not having to make a bus trip to Virginia to play for a rivalry game that you're going to play in football and play in basketball. Now you've got to take a flight to Bloomington, Indiana, and have your guys back in class the next day. And so that in itself, to me, just doesn't seem right, but I don't know enough about the finances and how that stuff works and conference alignment. But as much as I've seen, it makes almost as much sense as Boise State being in the Big East.
Relative to class, from that standpoint, you would have thought North Carolina would have left because their kids don't go to class.
I am not making that statement. Everyone knows that was not Corey Alexander.
All right.
That's Corey does not want to hear from Commissioner Swofford tomorrow morning.
Keep those emails coming to Hobo, not Corey.
Exactly.
Hey, Corey, just a quick thought. Virginia does have Devin Hall and London Perantes coming in next year, two really good guards. How do you see the team lining up next year based upon your strategy of trying to develop the three current freshmen?
I believe that next year's team is good. The year after, they're better. And the year after that, they're really good. Devin Hall is a kid that I'm very close to. I've coached him for the last 2 years in AAU. Great young man, great family, is a UVA kid through and through. It's going to be interesting to see how he develops as a – because he's a 6'5", legitimate point guard. He's not a – you know, he's not a combo guard. He is a point guard at 6'5", 205 pounds. And so the thing is to see how his skill level develops in the ACC is going to be interesting. I've never seen London. I don't know much about him. But in talking to the coaches, they are, you know, excited about his athletic ability. And, you know, and he can bring – he brings something completely different than Devin does. But one thing that I don't want to be forgotten, in my opinion, the best possible point guard for next year's team, assuming that he's healthy, could be Malcolm Brogdon.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And, you know, and so if you look at a lineup that includes Malcolm Brogdon at the point, Justin Anderson and Joe Harris on the wings, Anthony Gill at the four, Mike Toby at the five, and you come off the bench with Devin Hall or London – and you have Evan Nolte, you have Paul Jefferson, you have Akil Mitchell and Darian Atkins, you now have 10 quality ACC players. And that will be the first time in the Tony Bennett era that you can say that about this team. Because when you look back at the first recruiting class that Tony went after, there were only two ACC players in that bunch, Joe Harris and Akil Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
The other four realized they weren't ACC players, and they got out of the ACC.
Well, Corey, you got Hubble excited here. We thank you for taking a few minutes tonight. We will definitely have you back on as the season progresses, but best wishes to you. I know you got a lot of travels, so be safe and be productive, too.
Thank you guys for having me.
Take care, Corey.
Corey Alexander, we'll go to break. We'll come back with the Olympic report. Talk about next week's show. Stay tuned.